It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me? Or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
And we have an arrival. President-elect, Mr. Donald Trump. He will be spending a little time with us. The reaction you're hearing is the scoreboard shot. We showed it to you live. President-elect Donald Trump entering the stadium.
Well, that was shorter than I expected. But let me just say that yesterday, when President-elect Donald Trump went to the Army-Navy game, there was a rousing cheer. There were a lot of people report. I thought it would be louder than that. I thought that's what we'd hear. But that was a CBS report. Maybe they turned the dial down, you know. Anyway, Sandy Rios with you. And by the way, sorry to all of you Navy guys out there. The Army took the game for the first time in a very long time. So, but boy, talk about enthusiasm in a game. I think that's one of the things I noticed when Trump was being interviewed. He said something about, I don't know if it's great football, but there's so much enthusiasm here. And so he went to the Army-Navy game. He spent a lot of time with Oliver North, with other leaders. I guess it was kind of a working sports game, but that's what happened yesterday to the president-elect. Speaking of responses, cheering for Donald Trump at the Army-Navy game, Mrs. Clinton went to Capitol Hill and made lots of statements. In fact, we're going to play a couple of them. But when she left the Capitol, she was greeted by a group of sobbing women on her way out of the event. So, a lot of grief over the loss of the election by Hillary Clinton. But that brings me to another point which we need to make. One of the things that Mrs. Clinton said in terms while she was on Capitol Hill after, you know, I guess she's been resting and I'm sure she needed to rest. I have no problem with that. But she weighed in on this fake news thing. Let's listen.
Let me just mention briefly one threat in particular that should concern all Americans, Democrats, Republicans, and independents alike, especially those who serve in our Congress. The epidemic of malicious fake news and false propaganda that flooded social media over the past year, it's now clear that so-called fake news can have real-world consequences. This isn't about politics or partisanship. Lives are at risk. Lives of ordinary people just trying to go about their days, to do their jobs, contribute to their communities. It's a danger that must be addressed and addressed quickly. Bipartisan legislation is making its way through Congress to boost the government's response to foreign propaganda, and Silicon Valley is starting to grapple with the challenge and threat of fake news.
All right,
it's
enough of that.
Well,
here's the thing. This is what's happening. We've talked about this enough, but I'll say it again. Mrs. Clinton is an expert in fake news. So is the left. Could we say, you know, David Clark, Sheriff David Clark from Milwaukee, said on the air this week that hands off, don't shoot was Exhibit A of fake news out of Ferguson, Missouri in this past year. I think of Brian Williams, the lying NBC anchor who had to step down because he lied and made a story completely up. I think of Dan Rather, same thing, who reported that George W. Bush had, you know, avoided the draft. It was a totally fake document. Dan Rather knew that. That's what ended his career. And then I think, of course, Mrs. Clinton. Now, before I get to Mrs. Clinton, the point is this. They are using this whole notion of fake news. They are trying to create a new word. That's what they always do, from the alt-right to the pro-choice. You know, they always come up with these words. And the words have power. You know, the words that they think up are very clever. And they are really fabulous at this. So now, fake news. But to them, what they're trying to do, you know, it is the pot calling the kettle black, I do believe. They're wanting to say that all the news that you read that said that Hillary Clinton was maybe, let's see, derelict in Benghazi, that perhaps she's been involved in some really bad things with her husband, that the foundation, you know, ruined the state of Haiti, took money and did horrible things to the people of Haiti. Those kinds of things that you read, maybe from AFR, maybe from Breitbart, Drudge, it's fake news. You know, the Washington Post did this long article on it and listed all the fake news sites and supposedly referred to this committee, this group of people that are going to be deciding who, what the fake news is. So, you know, to help you, because you can't figure that out on your own. But we don't know who those people are. We don't know what their methods are. You know, ladies and gentlemen, could I just say that truth is what, there is truth. Some people argue that there's no truth, but truth is what comports with reality. That's how you know when something's fake or not. And I'll give you an example of the brilliance with which Mrs. Clinton has spun her own fake news. Remember when she said that she was under sniper fire when she landed in Bosnia, when she was first lady. And you'll recall that CBS did a report kind of exposing this. Let's listen.
It was supposed to be an example of Hillary Clinton's battle-tested experience.
I remember landing under sniper fire.
In a speech last week, Senator Clinton was referring to her visit to Tuzla, Bosnia in 1996 as First Lady. The brutal war was over, but hostilities continued. And though the trip was exactly 12 years ago tomorrow, the memory seemed etched in Clinton's mind.
There was supposed to be some kind of a greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles to get to our base.
Problem is, that's not what happened. And we should know, CBS News accompanied the First Lady and daughter Chelsea on that Bosnia trip. That's Senator Clinton talking to me on the military flight into Tuzla. And these are the pictures we recorded of the greeting ceremony when the plane landed. Compare that to Senator Clinton's account.
I remember landing under sniper fire. There was no greeting ceremony, and we basically were told to run to our cars. Now that is what happened.
Thank you.
There was no sniper fire either when Senator Clinton visited two Army outposts where she posed for photos, and no sniper fire back at the base.
Last night I
where she sang at a USO show starring Sinbad and Sheryl Crow.
I can't cry no more.
Referring to the CBS News video, Clinton aides today acknowledged her arrival in Bosnia was not quite as dramatic as Clinton put it.
She meant that there was fire in the hillside around the area when we landed, which was the case.
Who knows if she misremembered, misspoke, exaggerated. Whatever, it makes the case for Senator Obama that all this experience that she's been talking about is at least partly her imagination.
Hundreds of thousands have viewed the video online in just the past few days, a reminder that in politics, memory should always match the videotape.
Yeah.
Cheryl Atkinson, CBS News.
Now, Cheryl Atkinson, while she was still with CBS, you know, Cheryl was an honest reporter, so she ran into her own set of problems from actually reporting honestly, unlike so many of the others who really do, on a regular basis, produce fake news, much of it generated by Hillary Clinton. That's just one story. You know, there's a, she talked about how all of her grandparents were immigrants. Well, it turns out that one of her grandparents was an immigrant. The other three were American-born. One of her great-grandparents was American-born. It's a total lie. She said that she tried to join the Marines. You may not remember this. I do. This was an issue a long, long time ago. She tried to join the Marines, and the reason she couldn't is because they said she couldn't because she was a woman. And then later she admitted that wasn't true. Oh, and by the way, you should hear, I should stop and play this. On the Bosnia thing, where they were under sniper fire when they landed, it was so very dangerous, you can imagine the price that she's paid. When she was confronted and finally found out with the video, you should see Cheryl's report on this. It shows Mrs. Clinton and Chelsea greeting kids. And she said there was no, you know, meet and greet on the tarmac. Well, there was very much a meet and greet on the tarmac. It's just the opposite of what she said. But this was Hillary's excuse. This is how she explained it. Let's listen to cut two.
I remember landing under sniper.
No, wait, that's what I said when I was sleep deprived. You can read my book. And I said something very different. Yeah, I misspoke. Yeah, I totally misspoke. You know, I've talked about this endlessly. I wrote about it. And I don't know what I was thinking. Because, yeah, we were told that we had to land under, you know.
Okay, enough of that. You get it. You get the point. She's a liar. And she knows all about fake news. Then we could talk about the Benghazi video. Gee whiz, it was a video that caused that terrible. It was such a, yes, you know, but she knew better. She actually told her daughter that night it was a terrorist attack, but she told the families it was a video. We're going to get that filmmaker, she said, and they did. Of course, the whole thing was a lie. And then she said, told us that she'd never received classified or sent it, classified email on her Homebrew server, which, well, let's see. I believe that was a lie, according to the FBI director and according to Trent Franks. Total lie. Complete lie. And I could go on and on. She also said that Russia was behind the WikiLeaks release of John Podesta's email, which brings me to our next topic. You know that the whole notion of Russia hacking our elections. First of all, Mrs. Clinton and the left have to have an excuse for why they lost. The reason they lost is because you listened to fake news and you thought she was a bad person, but she really isn't. She's actually a wonderful person. She wishes everybody well. She is the most qualified person ever to run. She's the smartest person in the world. All that stuff that you read was fake news. And of course, then they want to use that term to discredit anything else that you may hear. And of course, now they're telling us that it's the Russians. But of course, you know that the FBI and the director said, no, we have no evidence to show that it was the Russians who hacked the election. But there has to be a reason she lost. And wouldn't it be convenient? We've talked about this a great deal. Remember, I told you they would blame it on the Russians and they would say that Donald Trump was connected to the Russians and that's how they would delegitimize the election. Well, that's what they're doing. And so Mrs. Clinton made a statement as well on that. As a matter of fact, let's go to Trump with Chris Wallace yesterday. And this is what he thinks about the Russian hacking. Cut four.
According to the Washington Post, the CIA has concluded that Russia intervened in the election to help you win the presidency. Your reaction?
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's just another excuse. I don't believe it. I don't know why. And I think it's just, they talked about all sorts of things. Every week it's another excuse. We had a massive landslide victory, as you know, in the Electoral College. I guess the final numbers are now at 306, and she's, you know, down to a very low number. No, I don't believe that at all.
You say you don't know why. Do you think that the CIA is trying to overturn the results of the election or somehow to weaken you in office?
Well, if you look at the story and you take a look at what they said, there's great confusion. Nobody really knows. And hacking is very interesting. Once they hack, if you don't catch them in the act, you're not going to catch them. They have no idea if it's Russia or China or somebody. It could be somebody sitting in a bed someplace. I mean, they have no idea.
Yes, I agree with Donald Trump on this because, interestingly enough, the FBI and the CIA have reached different conclusions. There's a war in our intelligence agencies over this. The FBI says there's no proof that it was the Russians. The CIA say, oh, yes, it was the Russians, and they were trying to help Donald Trump. So I'm just asking, who do you believe? We know that there's a serious problem. John Bolton was on, former Ambassador John Bolton was out over the weekend talking about this. I wanted to play a clip, but I'll just tell you that John is saying that it's curious to him that the FBI director said that there was no evidence of the Russians hacking the DNC email or Mrs. Clinton's. He said that sophisticated hackers don't leave traces. So why then would the Russians turn around and hack our voting, our election of 2016, and leave traces? That's the simplified version of what Ambassador Bolton said. By the way, he's going to be joining us tomorrow. We'll find out if he's going to be Secretary of State. We might know by tomorrow, but we'll ask him about this too. I just think it's a fake story. And speaking of fake news, I think this is fake news. So we're going to come back to that when we have more time. But coming up next, the borders are flooded. Jeff Sessions is the nominee for Attorney General, the strongest borders guy in on Capitol Hill. And we have some serious problems with Muslim immigration. The numbers are just increasing over and over again. Mark Krikorian joins us, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. You know, the charitable gift annuity concept is more important today than probably ever. It is something that you have heard me talk about for many, many years. And right now, for now, the tax code is still allowing charitable organizations to establish a charitable gift annuity so that you can be guaranteed permanent income for the rest of your life. Don't waste any time. So many of you have IRAs, 401k money. Peel off a piece of that. Establish your charitable gift annuity so that you have a portion of permanent income that you know is never going to change for the rest of your life. Would you do it today? Call AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543. Extension 345. That's 800-326-4543. Extension 345.
This is Max Lucado. The sinful nature is the stubborn, self-centered attitude that says, my way or the highway. The sinful nature is all about self, pleasing self, promoting self, preserving self. I have a sin nature, so do you. Under the right circumstances, you will do the wrong thing. You'll try not to, but you will. You have a sin nature. You were born with it. The heart of the human problem is the problem of the human heart. Christmas commemorates the day and the way God saved us from ourselves. The angel speaking to Mary in Matthew 1:21 says, "You are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." Each of us entered the world with a sin nature. God entered the world to take it away. This is Max Lucado, Because of Bethlehem.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. Highlights, the magazine for kids, is going gay because apparently children under the age of 5 need to be educated about same-sex marriage. The American Conservative first exposed this nonsense, the magazine coming under fire from cultural revolutionaries for not featuring enough gay families. To placate progressive bullies, Highlights for Children apologized and said future magazines will feature gay couples. So here's a cold hard fact, folks. Highlights is about to become a propaganda piece for militant LGBT and progressive activists, indoctrinating boys and girls as young as 2 years old. Moms and dads and grandparents need to understand that Highlights is no longer a child-friendly magazine. 1 million moms has launched a petition drive to urge Highlights to reconsider. So has American Family Association. You can access both petitions on ToddStearns.com.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Long before President-elect Donald Trump's promise of a wall along the southern border, barriers actually started going up a decade ago after President George W. Bush signed the Secure Fence Act of 2006. Of the nearly 2,000-mile-long U.S.-Mexico border, about 670 miles is now walled or fenced. Congress never approved additional funding for more, and the program essentially went away. That was then. This is now. President-elect Trump ran much of his campaign vowing to not only build along the entire border, but also make Mexico pay for it. However, some like Eloisa Tamez, who voted for Trump, don't have great confidence in how effective that'll be.
More walls will not solve the problem.
Aside from keeping people out, there's also the issue of what to do with those already living or staying here illegally. That was partially addressed when the president-elect on YouTube recently presented a plan for his first 100 days in office.
I will direct the Department of Labor to investigate all abuses of visa programs that undercut the American worker.
Something that's both celebrated and feared for industries that rely heavily on immigrant labor, like agriculture and construction.
It's extremely difficult to get any kind of visa.
Stan Merrick owns one of the largest construction companies in Texas. He's more than ready for reform. Merrick says right now, it's American businesses being punished for following the law, losing work to a growing number of outfits that skirt the rules by paying employees in cash and not coughing up taxes.
Companies like mine cannot invest in a labor force unless we level the playing field.
Merrick's motto is the best border security is at a job site, meaning he believes President-elect Trump could be on the right track with holding employers accountable.
All right, that was Casey Stegall with Fox. That was a report actually from last week. But because there's so much happening, I have to say, I think we've neglected the story of the border and of what's going on with immigration. And it's so big. It really is probably the definitive reason why Donald Trump won the presidency. That's my unscientific analysis. But there are 2,000 people coming across the border, it's estimated, every single day. In November, the influx was as high as anything we've seen. It was 46,195. U.S. State Department, the problem with the courts are just practically shutting down. They're collapsing under the caseloads. And, you know, like, so immigrants will come across the border and it will be 4 years before they have a court date to show up and be accountable. It's really ridiculous and out of control. We have a new president, and what does that mean? Mark Kerkorian is with us this morning. He's the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. And Mark, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So how would you describe, beyond what I just said, what's happening at the border right now, Mark?
The border is, what's happening is that is a version of what you saw in Germany, where the government is essentially inviting in people to claim to be refugees. It's a much smaller version, but it's the same thing. And let me explain. What you're seeing, mostly in South Texas, but elsewhere too, is Central Americans, and you're seeing a lot of Haitians and Africans as well, who are coming in and crossing the border, or even just showing up at the border, and saying that they want political asylum, so let me in. And what Obama is doing is letting them in, or letting them stay, giving them a piece of paper. They call it a notice to appear. It's like a summons, except, you know, it'll be months or years in the future. And then they let them go. They drive them to the bus station. And, in Central America, the paper that they're giving them, that our Border Patrol is giving them, they call it a permiso, a permit. And, you know, that's not what it is technically, but that they understand it that way as something that they get a piece of paper and then they're let go into the United States. And do you think they show up for their court dates? Of course not. They're not idiots. So we are, and word gets back immediately to people in Central America. Obviously, you know, they pick up their cell phone and they say, hey, you know, the American government said not to come, but we got here, turned ourselves into the Border Patrol, and they let us go. So come on up. And that's what we're seeing. Earlier this year, I testified before Senator Sessions' Immigration Subcommittee, and one of the other people testifying was the head of the union for the Border Patrol agents, the field agents. And he said that his agents have to let go because of Obama policies. They have to let go at least 80% of all of the people they apprehend at the border, let them go into the United States. That's why you're seeing what's going on at the border. It's not really because we need more walls or fencing or what have you. Some places we clearly do. The main problem is policy. It is Obama's policy to let illegal immigrants in and then just not follow up once they don't show up for their court dates.
You know, I just read some stories last week, Mark, about border agents. This is not new news to you, but just describing, I think it might have been the guy that you're talking about, the head of the border agents union, talking about changing diapers or going to buy, you know, diapers and just doing menial things like childcare, as opposed to enforcing the borders. It really is a disgraceful thing. And I know you've offered, I've heard you offer your own thoughts about how that might be staunched. I know certainly enforcing the laws that we have. I thought it was interesting, Casey Stegall's report, where the construction business owner said that, you know, it's the employers who need to be held accountable, but then they all have to be. I think that's a great way. Do you not agree that if we could get the employers not to hire illegal immigrants, that would take care of a huge part of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no question. Now, the Central American thing I was talking about is a specific thing that Obama has created, basically. But in the broader sense of controlling illegal immigration, the most obvious thing we need to do is make sure all employers check when they hire somebody to make sure they're telling the truth about who they are. There's an online system. It's free to use. It's called E-Verify. And, I mean, my center has used it for a long time. When you hire somebody, you already take their Social Security number and their date of birth and all that stuff. You know, you have to submit it to IRS and what have you. And this system called E-Verify does, is you check and make sure that the number is real, that the name matches the number, you know, that the date of birth makes sense. Sometimes people steal the identities of American kids. So the date of birth in the system would show up as, you know, the person's 7 years old, he's obviously lying, you know, that kind of thing. That exists now. A lot of people use it, but it's still voluntary. And making that a nationwide part of the hiring process for everybody evens the playing field so that the legitimate businesses don't basically get taken advantage of by the crooked ones.
It seems to me that Oklahoma implemented something like that, some version of E-Verify, and that the state pretty much emptied out of illegal immigrants, at least close to it. Am I remembering that correctly?
Well, I don't think Oklahoma has. Arizona did, South Carolina, a bunch of states have. And Arizona was the first one to do it. And actually, there's been research on this, and not by my center, by some, you know, sort of quasi-lefty center in California. And they said they found a 17% drop in the illegal population when Arizona did this. So making it nationwide and actually following up, you know, making sure businesses use it, for everybody all the time as a standard thing can have a huge effect. It's not going to be a silver bullet. It's not a magic wand that makes everything go away, but it's the single thing that would make the biggest difference, you know, the most bang for the buck right away. And the problem is Congress has to approve that. That would be a change in the law, not something the president can do on his own. And even the Democrats and the business Republicans, mostly agree with it. It's just that they're holding hostage this, you know, nationwide use of this E-Verify system to getting an amnesty first. That's what's always been the stumbling block. And hopefully with President Trump in office starting next month, we may be able to get through Congress this E-Verify mandate on its own without having to give out an amnesty beforehand, which would kind of defeat the purpose.
Mark, I'm sure you've given this a lot of thought. I've too, but you're the expert on this. With Senator Jeff Sessions, assuming that he gets confirmed, and I think he will. I think he'll get confirmed.
There's no real question about it.
Yeah. We all know how Jeff Sessions, he has been the professor on the floor of the Senate, lecturing his colleagues in the most gentlemanly way, day after day, month after month, year after year, and now it looks like he'll be attorney general. What can an attorney general do to turn these policies around? Is he the one key cabinet position that could implement what Trump promised in the campaign?
The Secretary of Homeland Security obviously has the lead role now. Because the old INS used to be in Justice Department, which is, where the Attorney General is. But when Homeland Security was created, it was moved into there. So General John Kelly, who's a retired Marine general, very strong on border security. is going to be Homeland Security Secretary. And likewise, and he's also going to be confirmed. There's not really any doubt about that. We don't know yet what his views are on the rest of immigration, because border security is an important part of the immigration issue, but it's just one part. But the Attorney General, you know, when Senator Sessions becomes Attorney General, does play a very significant role. First of all the immigration courts and all of that whole appeals process is in the Justice Department. So that will be under Senator Sessions, Attorney General Sessions, starting hopefully next month or the month after. And all of the prosecution related to immigration. In other words, for instance, when an illegal immigrant comes back after being deported, you know, he actually went through the whole process, was deported, they sent him home. If that person comes back, he's committing a felony. That's a reentry after deportation is a felony crime. And it's up to the Justice Department whether they're going to prosecute that kind of thing. So all kinds of decisions like that would be under Jeff Sessions' authority. So yes, he's not the lead, he wouldn't be the lead role in immigration enforcement, but he would be, you know, a close second.
The Sanctuary City situation, I'm a little confused about that, too, because we know how Senator Sessions feels about sanctuary cities. Honestly, I have to say again, he has been the most eloquent a spokesman for the national interest on the whole issue of out-of-control immigration of anyone, whether from visas to the border to sanctuary cities to all of it. And thank God for him. I've learned a lot myself. I've learned a lot from you. I learned a lot from Senator Sessions. All right, so on the issue of sanctuary cities, what can he do about that, Mark?
Couple of things. Let me just start by seconding your comment about Senator Sessions. I mean, I know a lot of congressmen and senators, and some of them really are kind of the cartoon version of a political hack, and most of them aren't. Senator Sessions is probably the lawmaker that I have the most respect for, regardless of his views on anything. The guy really is, you know, one of the most, one of the best senators there is, I got to say that. And he really has the chance to be probably one of our best attorneys general in American history. Again, about sanctuary cities, the first thing that he's going to do is send a memo to all the law enforcement communities saying around the country, saying, look, when ICE, that's the immigration enforcement people, say they want you to hold on to somebody, that's not optional. That's not a request. That's a notification. This administration has been basically telling communities it's okay to be a sanctuary city. It's up to you. So first thing, send a letter out saying it's not optional. If the ACLU sues you, you come and talk to us and we'll defend you. That's the first thing. This administration has not done that. The second thing, if they refuse, and, you know, San Francisco and the rest, they'll refuse. They stop their money related to law enforcement. There's several grant programs from Justice. Some of the cities have already said they're willing to give up that money. They don't care. Then the next step, potentially, is suing the jurisdiction. Just like Obama sued Arizona for trying to help enforcing the law, you can see what you may well see Washington sue some of these jurisdictions for refusing to comply with the law. Basically, you know, honestly, it's going to be kind of like the desegregation fight. You know, these sanctuary cities are basically like George Wallace standing in front of the schoolhouse door saying, sanctuary now, sanctuary tomorrow, sanctuary forever. I mean, it really is a replay of the desegregation fight. And then, if that doesn't work, the kind of nuclear option, if you will, is to criminally prosecute the city council or county supervisors for harboring illegal aliens. Because that's what they're doing. They're committing crimes. Now, you know, I don't know if it'll come to that, but that's potentially in his, you know, in his toolbox.
Well, it's funny because, you know, the big city mayors are talking big. Oh, they're talking big, whether it's Rahm Emanuel or whether it's the mayor of New York City. We're always going to be sanctuary cities. Well, we'll see when it comes with federal dollars and real lawsuits that have consequences, personal consequences. We'll see about that. Yeah, it's just an amazing thing that they should thumb their nose in the eye of the federal law on this and the will of the American people. We have to take a break. Mark Kerkorian is my guest. He's the executive director for one of the nation's finest immigration organizations, this Center for Immigration Studies, meaning for legal immigration. All right, Sandy Rios with you. We'll be back right after this.
We are going to the Holy Land in March. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I only lead one tour a year to Israel. It's not my day job. It's just an annual tour that I do as I learn from my dad how to take folks to Israel. And we're going to have a wonderful experience. Most of the folks going are listeners to American Family Radio or supporters of American Family Association. And we're going to have a great time March 9th through the 17th. If you want information on this tour of the Holy Land, you can do it two ways. You can call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5. 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5. That's families with an S. And leave us your name and your address, and we'll put a brochure in the mail to you. And if you want to go online, you can visit us at twholyland.com. twholyland.com. Again, won't be long till we close out this tour, so if you want more information, let us know.
Dysfunction in Washington is not the problem. The real issue is a lack of leadership.
When it comes to economic policy, our government seems to be out of control, and Christians could have a role in restoring it.
Christians will change the direction of America if we step up.
Visit afastore.net to find the DVD Surviving Government Economic Policies with Dan Celia, as well as all the resources of the AFA Cultural Institute.
Hello, I'm Gary Roby, host of Call to Worship, heard each Sunday here on American Family Radio. During this holiday season, remember that we should celebrate the birth of the Christ child, our Savior and King of Kings, throughout the year. And I pray that God blesses you and yours as He directs your steps in the coming new year. Tune in to American Family Radio this Sunday at 5 a.m. Central as we glorify God together during our call to worship.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump has lined up an impressive array of demonstrably capable people to fill the senior ranks of his administration. His instincts have served him well, until now. In the face of a political firestorm fanned by reports that the U.S. intelligence community is convinced Vladimir Putin's Russia interfered in the recent presidential election campaign, Mr. Trump is considering making ExxonMobil chairman Rex Tillerson his Secretary of State. While Mr. Tillerson is clearly an extraordinary executive, his business dealings and personal ties with Putin would make him a real liability for the president-elect. Three Republican senators, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, and Marco Rubio, have already expressed concerns about a Tillerson nomination. That's enough to sink it. More will doubtless pile on. At this time especially, Mr. Trump needs a Secretary of State unencumbered by any perceived pro-Kremlin alignment. So does our country. This is Frank Gaffney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
It's hard to believe Christmas when we're talking about news stories, but we are getting really close, and we just have to stop and remember, at least I do, just for a second, there's something much more at stake here than The news stories, there is a big story, and that's the story of the birth of Christ, who came to save all men and redeem the world to himself. And I know he's in the process of doing that, even though sometimes the news looks infinitely bad. We're talking with Mark Krikorian, who is the executive director for the Center for Immigration Studies. Today in, not Chicago, I got my cities mixed up. Today in Washington, D.C., there is a Muslim march. Muslims and allies march to the White House, and they're marching because they say that they think Donald Trump is going to put a Muslim registry in place, and they want to march in solidarity before he takes office. And meanwhile, a current Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, is visiting a huge notorious mosque in Northern Virginia today because allegedly, according to the Justice Department, the number of hate crimes are on an uptick. I say allegedly because there are reports that, you know, I can't imagine the Justice Department, you know, doing any fake news or fake reporting. I know that's a shock, but it seems as though they are want to do that. We have a problem with immigration, Muslim immigration in this country. Let me just read one more thing. This is from Refugee Resettlement Watch. According to the numbers, just from October the 1st to November the 15th, we allowed 1,894 Somalians in the country, 1,867 Syrians, 1,388 Iraqis, 290 Afghanis, and I could go on and on. They are increasing week by week. That's 315 weekly. These are just Muslims. Not ethnic from the country, but Muslims as well. Mark, we have a serious problem with having out of control Muslim immigration. Just your thoughts, and again, what did I miss in that little business I just gave? What's something I missed?
Well, the issue that's most immediate with regard to the Muslim immigration issue seems to be the refugee resettlement, because obviously there are people of the Islamic faith who come in all different kinds of immigration categories, whether it's, you know, job-based or family-based or what have you. But the refugee flow, especially from Somalia, really does seem to be creating kind of communities that protect and foster terrorist attitudes and then terrorist behavior. You see that Somalis in Columbus, Ohio. This is where Ohio State was. That's the number two Somali community in the United States. The Somali community in Minneapolis is the biggest. And several dozen people from there, young men, have gone to become terrorists, either in Somalia or for ISIS in the Middle East. So I think the odds are pretty good that once Trump takes office, he is at least going to suspend refugee resettlement from countries where there's a lot of terrorism, you know, Syria, Somalia, Afghanistan, that kind of thing, pending some kind of bottom-up re-examination of whether this can be done safely. And I got to say, I don't see how you can vet, how you can screen people from countries where there's basically no government left. I mean, who do you call in Somalia? Do you call the DMV in Mogadishu to check somebody's records? No, you can't. And the other part of this issue isn't just the terrorism issue. It's what Donald Trump called extreme vetting, which I wasn't wild about the term, but the idea is that you're checking people not just for ties to actual violent groups. That's important. We do that now. It's checking them for attitudes and beliefs that are contrary to a free society. Not political checks, but things like, do you believe it's okay to punish people who leave their religion? That the government should be killing apostates? That's what apostate means, somebody who leaves his religion. Do you think it's okay to kill homosexuals? You know, do you think it's okay to prevent people from criticizing, you know, religious prophets, for instance? Now, whether you think any of that stuff is good or bad isn't the point. Do you think it's okay for the law to take those actions? And if you do, then frankly, try some other country. Go to Saudi Arabia. We don't want you here. And those are the two issues on Islamic immigration. The terrorism part that everybody gets, but also the problem of importing people with anti-American, anti-constitutional views. Because ultimately, if you keep importing people who hate freedom, you're going to have less freedom in your country.
I'm just curious, why wouldn't you just ask the question, do you embrace Sharia law? And how would you, if you come into the United States, we have a constitution, and then you, as a Muslim, do you, which is superior? Which has the highest priority? Which would you adhere to? If they say Sharia, then they're out. I mean,
I agree. Although, remember, Sharia includes other things that aren't contrary to our law, you know, personal hygiene,
banking practices.
But that's what I'm saying is you talk about the specific things so that, you know, conceivably, you could be a Hindu or a Christian and think it's okay to kill people who leave your religion. Now, mostly, obviously, we're dealing with Islam. But the point is those kind of questions need to be, you're right in saying that Sharia is the source or the kind of label for these anti-American beliefs in Islam. But it really needs to be something that's not religious specific. The question needs to be, do you believe in the basic principles of a free society, whatever your religion is? And frankly, even if you're a communist or a Nazi, you know, the point is, we don't want you here. Whatever your beliefs, if the beliefs are contrary to our Constitution.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was a big story last week that I never got to. But I know, I'm sure you're all over this, Mark, and that was this story about nearly 2,500 refugees who were from terrorist hotspots, who were turned away from Australia. And the President of the United States, Barack Obama, said they could come here, and the State Department refused any information about who they are. It's like even Congress couldn't find out. What is the story with this story?
These are boat people, because Australia, remember, is an island, so the illegal aliens, most of them, they don't sneak across a border. They get on boats from the Middle East, lots of Iranians and Afghans, Somalis. And what Australia has done has actually been pretty hard line. I mean, anybody they catch at sea, they don't bring them to Australia. They pay a couple of other island countries nearby to set up detention facilities where they process them there. That way the Australia's courts can't get to them. They have the same problem with the courts as we do, and, you know, whatever their version of the ACLU is. So the problem is that they don't want these people. They've screened them. They said, we're not taking these people in. But the people there, they can't send them back because Iran, for instance, doesn't take people back if they don't want to come back. They won't take settlements in one of the countries in the region that's willing to take them, like Cambodia and New Guinea. They want to hold out for a first world country. So, and there's kind of a political problem for the prime minister there. It's become a, you know, thing in the newspapers. So apparently our administration has said, hey, don't worry about it. Don't sweat it. We'll just dump them all in America. That's no problem. And so that's what they did. It was a secret agreement that only was revealed after the election. And the Republican chairman of the judiciary committees in the House and the Senate wrote the administration and said, what's up with this? You know, what's going on? How many people, et cetera? They said they actually, apparently, their staff called up the State Department and said, how many, actually, exactly, how many people are we talking about? Because we know generally how many it might be, but we don't know. State Department said, we can't tell you, it's classified. Classified? What the heck does that mean? There's no, it's not classified. It's just, this is absurd, and it's part of a trend where not only this administration, but even the previous one, has been taking groups of refugees for foreign policy reasons, basically to do other countries a favor to dump them into America and get rid of, get them away from whatever country they're in. It's absurd. There's no excuse for it.
There is no excuse for it. And, of course, under the Refugee Resettlement Program, we have talked about this, but it's been a while. There are so many million dollars, probably billions of dollars, going into this. And it's the UN, Higher Commission on Refugees that's deciding who comes here.
Right.
We have no say about it. And even governors are not allowed to know who's being sent to their states. Mark, are you saying that that actually has happened under other presidents besides Obama?
Yeah, the State Department was doing this even under, you know, Bush and Clinton before that. It's just that the numbers were smaller. And, you know, generally speaking, there were the percentage of people from Islamic areas where there's a lot of terrorism was less. So that's why it wasn't quite as hot button an issue, but it's been brewing for a long time. A lot of these, and you know, the reason One of the reasons it becomes so problematic is the State Department and the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is in Health and Human Services, going to be under Congressman Price when he takes over. They look for cheap places, low cost of living places to go to, so that they don't settle any refugees practically in Washington, D.C. or Manhattan or the west side of Los Angeles. They settle them in little communities that do not have the resources to deal with the school issues. The groups that resettle these people, their whole function in resettling them really is just signing them up for welfare. That's what resettlement means. They sign them up for welfare, so these communities, they don't have the money for the schools, for the welfare, and yet they're just dumping these people in them, and whether they like it or not, they're showing up. So our whole refugee system really needs to be completely overhauled. Even from a moral perspective, refugee resettlement is unacceptable, because we've done research on this earlier this year, and it turns out that it costs 12 times as much to resettle a refugee here as it does to take care of them, you know, in the country where they first took refuge. In the Middle East, that would be Turkey or Lebanon or Jordan. 12 times as much. So what that means is, when we take one person, there's 11 other people we can't help with that money. This is like feeding a hungry man. You've got hungry people, you bring one of them and you give them caviar instead of give rice and beans to 12 people. It's just morally wrong. I mean, refugee resettlement is immoral. And the idea that it continues like this is just, it's appalling.
Well, and we have to say, in the minute that I have here, the Catholic Charities has made, I think, $500 million a year. They're making that. Lutheran Services, also there's a Baptist agency that's making money hand over fist doing this. And that too is just absolutely appalling and disgraceful. One last thing I have to ask you about, Mark, before we run out of time. There's talk about Andy Puzder being chosen to be Labor Secretary, and he is a guy that's over CKE Restaurants with Carl Jr.'s and Hardee's. There's reports that he's really bad on immigration, and he would be Labor Secretary. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, he's been terrible. He was one of the leaders in pushing for the Gang of Eight bill, and even since then, you know, that's that Schumer-Rubio amnesty from a few years ago, very high profile. Once he was nominated, National Review and Breitbart and other people started pointing out how terrible he was on immigration, and he released this statement saying that I will fiercely defend American workers and, you know, this sort of thing. So I don't know. I don't trust the guy, to be perfectly honest. I mean, Labor Department really has an important role in running guest worker programs, and the fox is going to be guarding the hen house, I'm afraid.
Well, one would hope that with Senator Jeff Sessions having at least probably one of the ears of Donald Trump, that this kind of an appointment would be stopped on his tracks. And it's interesting. Are you optimistic, Mark?
Yeah, I'm optimistic. I mean, I'm cautiously and pessimistically optimistic. I mean, we're definitely going to, there's no question, next 4 years is going to be better than anything that it would have been under the criminal that the Democrats nominated. And I think we can get some real advances. You know, it's as Churchill said in a different context, it's not the end. It's not even the beginning of the end, but it's the end of the beginning.
I love it. I love it. Well, I have a spring in my step, too. I'm relieved. I feel like we've just gotten a reprieve. Even if it's for a short time, I'm grateful, because I think many of us were just beginning to hyperventilate under the pressure of all of it, because everything was going so badly. So I thank God for this moment in time where we can take a deep breath and actually do something about the ignoring of our national sovereignty, of our laws, certainly on the issue of immigration. Mark Krikorian, Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.